Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between rural and urban America. We would have them all solved by now if we were actually seeking solutions. We're going to do that. That's our theme. Either provide a solution or shut up. That's what we came up with today with Across the Pond. Andrew Henderson, I don't know Jay Truitt. I don't think he's just trying to find a way to avoid you. He claims that he hasn't actually met with the customer, a farmer, in 2 full weeks because of COVID. And so he's out and about now, actually running a business. I don't know what's wrong with that guy.
Yappity yappity yap. Right. So after all the billions of dollars he's collected and stolen from farmers' pockets over the years, they finally got a 2-week break, and he pretended to have COVID just so that he could. Yeah. He was the whole time was probably a green screen. He was on vacation in Athens or something, and then
you clearly have watched too many Q feeds, Jay Truitt. Coming to us from a rural, undisclosed location in Indiana, John Boland sitting in, pretending to be Andrew Henderson today. How are you, John?
There's no way I could fill his shoes. No way. The only thing that comes to mind when I think about Andrew, and I really love Andrew, but I think my descendants might have been the people that ran his people out of this country. So first thing that came to my mind. Guerrilla warfare, yeah, in the hills and hollers.
Right.
Yeah, we told him to go home.
Mm-hmm. It finally occurred to him that they lost.
I don't think he's ready to admit that, is he?
No, he's not. No. He's trying to help us get over it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know where we start today, but Jay, John, and I spent the weekend together, and it's like now we just can't separate. We got that Siamese twin thing going on, so you know, right, you're going to drag him along. He did not call Jolene like he was supposed to while we're on the trip, so sorry about that, Jolene, but we're here now. Jay, I know that you and I talked about this a bit last week because we referenced somebody close to where you're at. Mm-hmm. There is so much been going on with the attack on kennels and commercial licensed dog owners.
Right.
Every time I spend time with folks that are actually involved and deal with the scrutiny of the USDA and inspections, now it's pretty clear to me that this USDA, if they show up to do an inspection, they're looking for a reason to shut you down. And all of that is in the context that we replace 9 million dogs a year in this country, and yet people don't want anybody to raise them. So it's a crazy scenario. John, is there any embellishment in what I just said?
Not at all. Not at all. It's interesting to me that how these people want to shut down something they've never witnessed firsthand. It's just all... Yeah. It's information that they've carried over from 25, 30 years ago. And you guys know as well as anybody that in any industry, there's a bad apple that will give the entire industry a bad name.
Right.
But they just keep replaying old footage from decades ago that they collected somewhere, probably not even Amish breeders.
Probably not even in the United States.
Probably not.
Maybe, right. I think that's the thing, right? And I mean, what kind of gets lost in this whole deal is what is USDA's mission? And, you know, from my perspective, obviously, I always kind of focus on it. What's the actual regulation, you know, and what does the charter at USDA say and all of those sorts of things? And what are these big mission statements and the political side of this thing, what was really supposed to drive it? And subsequently at the state level as well now, because a lot of that's been handed down through cooperative agreements to the state level and they get paid to do this, is that their whole goal was supposed to be to help us in the development and understanding there should have been research, you know, provided. That's what we thought all this these tax dollars were going for over the years. And it's what we funded. I mean, we've literally funded all kinds of research into this decades ago. And lo and behold, turns out they didn't really care about the fact that for a lot of people, this is a primary source of income. And for tens, maybe, I know at least tens of thousands of families, this is crucial supplemental income. Not just important, but supplemental income that other stuff in their operation starts coming apart if they don't have. And so forget about the fact that these people love animals just as much as anybody else in the world, blah, blah, blah. That's, again, what got lost from the very beginning is what is USDA's purpose and intent? I mean, for goodness sakes, the law is the law for them, too.
Well, and, I think you went right to the core of the issue, and that is that the United States Department of Agriculture, is its role to ensure all things are good and to advocate for the good? Or is its role simply to regulate and try to create hurdles to put people out? And that whole mindset gives you great insight into what they're attempting to do and where they go. Now, keep in mind, and John can speak to this very well, the USDA continues to get pressure, and the people who are typically the loudest are the people who want to put it all to an end. So in many cases, they're just responding to pressure they get, John, from the public.
That's absolutely right. And Jay said one word that really encompasses the entire thing, because it's a federal government bureaucracy. And he said politics. That's what happens. And whoever's leading the White House at the time is going to be putting their people in places of power there at the USDA, just like every other federal agency. And they're going to follow the agenda of the lobbyists that put them in power. So, It's just every 4 or 8 years of damage that's done or work that's been done that's torn apart by the next administration, whichever case it may be. But the if you look at anything that the USDA has done under the Biden administration, and you follow any of it on social media, you'll see the animal rights extremists, high-fiving every decision that's made. But, you know, the previous 4 years, with the exception of one major law that was passed under the Trump administration, it's just the opposite. So what is the answer? Well, there's the bigger concern, Trent, is, and as you and I have talked a lot about, is the weaponization of these organizations to go after what we call low hanging fruit or soft targets. And I think what we're witnessing, the attack that we're witnessing against the Amish is the single most, that may be a stretch there. You guys be the judge of my comment, but a massive discrimination issue, religious discrimination. It's something that we've overlooked in this attempt to defend these Amish breeders and Amish farmers that won't defend themselves based on religious belief. And the animal rights extremists are fully aware of that. Mm-hmm. They'll attack them and put them in a corner, knowing they will not appear on the news to defend themselves, knowing that they won't hire an attorney and file a lawsuit, right, knowing that they won't even defend themselves in court often. And if there is a court settlement,
Or as we heard, John, the other day in a county commission meeting, that may have their fate in their hands.
That's exactly right. In northwestern Indiana, there's legislation that's, call it legislation, whatever. In many cases, it's county ordinances. And I've been telling folks that these animal rights extremists aren't just in the state houses and in D.C. They're going out to every little county council meeting and city ordinance meeting, zoning board meetings. They're putting their people in places in small towns. They know the definition of grassroots. We like to talk about it a lot, but we don't have anywhere near the power or the money or the means that they have right now. We're fighting an uphill battle against them.
Well, the reality is that John and I spent 70 days together this summer on the Arise USA tour talking about the importance of local control. And that is ultimately the answer. The problem is the people quickest to accept that and run with it and make a difference locally are those who are our adversaries, because that's their job. They don't do this when they have a little extra time. It is what they get paid to do. And that's why we need you to stand up. All right, we're off and running. It is a Tuesday edition. John Boland setting in for Andrew Henderson, Jay Truitt, Trent Luce, Lone Creek Cattle Company, providing the opportunity locally to produce a greater supply of beef. In this case, we're talking about tender. Now, John and I had a tremendous prime ribeye in our trip, and it was tender, but the Piedmontese cattle is tender every single time. The guaranteed tenderness is the answer. Get more details about how you as a cattleman can reap the rewards from Marlin Will at LoneCreekCattleCo.com. We're back with more Roll Route after this. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce alongside Jay Truitt. On the right, my right, maybe it's your left, John Boland, always in the center. Okay, I know Jay's sitting there on pins and needles wanting to chime in, but one other thing I want to add is that I said that the USDA is always responding to public pressure, but let's also remember, just in the last 30 days, we've seen what has happened. We have had two past executives from HSUS, the Humane Society of the United States, in the investigative division of APHIS for quite some time at the USDA. So we're infiltrating those people who we've been fighting into those government bureaucracies. And they're the ones who decide whether, yes, that person needs to be investigated. And just last week, we saw a known activist who was once listed as an FBI domestic terrorist, Tracy Stone Manning. She was, what's the word, Jay? The Senate confirmed her.
She is confirmed. As a, yep.
In the Bureau of Land Management. So it's not just responding to the activists, but we now have these activists who are in positions of power within the government agencies.
Well, the thing that I want to, so number one, I kind of just wanted to applaud everything that was just said before the break about what's driving this from both you guys. But the second side of this is let's not leave out the fact that this is huge business. The environmentalism and animal rights activism is a massive business in the United States, and it pays pretty darn good. Maybe at one point in the past, it was people that had some deep, dark passion, you know, and loved dogs more than human beings, or loved all animals more than human beings. And maybe once people like Ingrid Newkirk's statement actually mattered. But the funny thing is, right, you know, when you walk around in Washington, D.C. and you see people wearing some pretty fine tailored suits that are lobbying for the HSUS and ASPCA, and that doesn't mean that there aren't good things that happen, blah blah blah. I don't even want to go down that path. I'm just saying that you also can go back to the whole Pacelli era, where you come to find out the whole thing was operated like a racketeering money laundering scheme.
I prefer to call it a brothel.
And something like that too, right? And
they were using interns for sex favors, right, for donors. Sure. That's a brothel. Right. And
so you get,
it was definitely a racketeering operation. It still is.
Right, but it's tens of millions of dollars get funneled in. If you help me here in state X, or do what? We're going to target here for a little bit. We're going to funnel all this money from all over the United States, and they've run the 4-minute ad on TV. And, oh, by the way, I'm married to a producer over at ABC. And so we can help you by getting some special coverage here that nobody else is going to be able to get, et cetera, et cetera. It's you combine that with a political system that is just looking for people to be pissed off. I mean, literally just looking for anything it can to try to figure out how to split us up. And it's like a magic potion.
Jay, you do know what HSUS stands for, correct?
Well, I probably
don't
know what.
You stay.
Yeah.
Have sex, you stay.
Yeah.
It just so happens that John Boland was breaking down the financial reports, and I think it's pretty mind-boggling for people who are not in tune with how true what Jay just said was. ASPCA, what do their numbers look like in terms of revenue for the past 2 years, John Boland?
Oh, they're 2018-19 statements. They haven't put anything out for 2020 yet. That's going to be a really interesting one to see if how COVID affected them. But it was an average of $250 million a year, I believe, wasn't it, Trent?
$250 million. It was $500 million in revenue in 2 years. That's $250 million a year, plus HSUS is $150 million plus. We're talking about two organizations, just two of the animal rights organizations that have revenues of $400 million annually.
Yeah.
How do you combat that? I mean, it's – and you nailed it when you said a racketeering – you know, organization, that the entire animal rights extremist movement, it fits perfectly into the racketeer-influenced corrupt organization statutes. In fact, you know, ASPCA and HSUS paid a huge settlement under the RICO statutes when they went after the circuses and just continue their business. I mean, the money they had to pay the settlement, I don't remember what it was now, but it was millions of dollars.
$15 million.
That was a drop in the bucket to them. That was nothing. Right. That was, you know, fire up the sad commercials on TV and they'll collect that in a weekend.
Right.
So it's until there's somebody with enough intestinal fortitude in a position of power in the Department of Justice that's willing to look into these organizations as what they are, is the biggest mafia organization that's ever existed in the history of this country. And go after them and start taking them down. We're just going to continue to lose our rights. It's more than, you know, we want to eat meat. We want to raise dogs. We're going to lose. They're part of that elitist 1% group that believes that they are gifted with more intelligence and more expertise than anybody else.
Right.
And they're just going to continue to erode our rights.
Jay, one reason that I like talking about this, particularly with John, because he's got hands-on experience, is that our typical colleagues in beef and pork and chicken production, we want to somehow separate ourselves from food animals compared to companion animals. And, well, you know, good luck to you dog people, but we're not getting involved because then they'll come after us. When they succeed in shutting down all the commercial dog breeders, they will come after the food producers in the same exact way. And there will be a segment of people no longer there to assist in fighting. It's no different than Martin Niemöller in Nazi Germany when they're talking about they came for this one, they came for that one, they came for this, and then they came for me and there was nobody else left. That's what we need to do is wake everybody else up. It's about property rights.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, there was a time maybe that you could have a rational, common sense conversation with people about, hey, listen, there are just things that need to occur in the countryside to be able to keep the economic activity going on and to protect the food supply, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't trust that conversation to save the day in the United States anymore. I mean, we have this never ending conversation about how pork and poultry ought to be raised. And, you know, I'm a beef guy, but by nature, but the half the conversations that we have about pork and poultry are littered with just false information and mistruths about what it does to the animal and how the animal quote unquote feels and doesn't feel. I'm still not convinced that chickens have feelings just like everyone else. But the truth is, We can't even have a rational conversation about it. And I think that to your point, Trent, that what made me say all that is to say this. Sadly, those of us in the food production industry, we're still trying to have a real conversation about a realistic conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And we see the rest of this as just being unrealistic. And so you go, well, like I don't even have anything to say. I don't know what to do about your feelings. And the first thing that we do is we kind of make fun of the all the women who feel like that. Well, the problem with that is that we've already lost because those people don't care if there's food on the table tomorrow. They don't care Somebody in some other state somewhere loses their livelihood, that's not their problem. And of course, I've even had people say, well, the government subsidizes all of them. Well, they don't subsidize some Amish farmer in the hills of XYZ. They don't even subsidize me on the hills of XYZ.
And they would if you wanted them to.
Yeah, I probably could, but again, I kind of take the same tact as all these Amish and Mennonite operators in this area, right? And the truth of the matter is here, we've just lost the ability to have an honest to goodness real conversation about what's real. And it gets really deep, and it may be just like too much this early in the morning, but I think our ever increasing drive towards a secular society combined with a government that literally just believes that it is the thing that the secular society should worship. It's the ultimate power, and is how you produce this little bureaucrat that comes out to do the inspection. If possible, he'll make it overtime rates so that he has to charge you a time and a half or double time to get your inspection completed. And his whole purpose in life has become that he's part of the new religious elite, which is government in America.
You're nailing it.
And if it's just a super dangerous place for us to be as a country, once we start elevating people to a place that they're far above where man was supposed to be.
You mean like the Pope did yesterday? Is that what you just said? Oh, wait, I got to go to a break. KarenStaley.com for that CD. KarenStaley.com for the Arise USA songs. God Save the Cowboy, my favorite. We'll be back with second half after this. Welcome back. Rural Route, Trent Luce alongside Jay Truitt, John Bolin. I'm not here to offend Catholics. I'm just telling you that this Pope is the epitome of what you just said, Jay Truitt. A guy had a meeting yesterday with 40 religious leaders from around the world, and they come out and basically say, we're going to worship the creation, not the creator.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand this. And people just willingly go along with it.
Now, once you cross the line and you believe that mankind is the highest authority, then all of a sudden you look at everything differently and you believe that mankind can actually change the rules, can change the standards, can do it. And again, John said it from the very beginning, right? Sure, there's always going to be a bad apple somewhere involved in everything. We have bad apples in everything. Literally, there's no exemption to that. From bankers to zebra salesmen, you're gonna actually have somebody at some point that's gonna abuse it. When local communities though start becoming more of a secular community, and stop being the kind of faith-based communities that we thrived on for a long time, they don't police themselves. And so people won't go, people don't have the guts anymore to go do it. They'll look for a way to get the government to do what they should have done. If any of us see a dog breeder that's doing something that's inappropriate, the proper thing for you to do is not to call USDA. It's to go sit down and talk to that man or woman or family or whatever and say, hey, explain to me what you're doing. Why is this that you're doing what you're doing? Right? Let's have a conversation about it. Let's talk about it. Or do you need some help? Maybe, you know, maybe something just went awry.
Interesting, Jay, because what you're describing is exactly what the Amish breeders organization here in Indiana are doing. They actually have a mentorship program where two or three of these guys go around and visit each kennel. Mm-hmm. And in a caring family type approach, they say, look, this is what needs to be done to improve your conditions here. And I had told them they didn't start this program because of what I said, but I have told them that they need to self-regulate. They need to go. And if they know there's a breeder that is doing things that will shine a light on the entire industry, they need to go to them as friends and family and do exactly what you said. And, right. and I call the organization here, is doing exactly that. They're improving everything, tremendously here. But Trent made a good point on our drive back. We were talking about this and he said it's, and this is negative and it's disheartening, but it's truth. And truth is hard to swallow sometimes. Trent said it'll never be enough. He said, John, you know as well as I do, they're going to do all of this and they're still, these animal rights extremists will not settle until every kennel is empty and all of these people are put out of business. And it's, Trent, when our visit to Pioneer Equipment is a great example of how these Amish folks have gone from maybe different types of farming into the dog breeding, where it's holding families together. Their entire families are involved in raising these dogs correctly, and they use their kids as ways of behavior enrichment and get these dogs acclimated to different scenarios so they can be put in homes where they're. Mm-hmm. But they're people don't look at the human part of this. They don't care that they're going to shut down an industry and destroy generations of a family. They don't
listen.
Care about that at all.
We did go through this when we had a discussion about what to do with horses at the end of their life. Already, that's one of those battles that's already kind of run the full game. And I never will forget when I was walking around in Washington D.C. Lobbying against the ban on horse slaughter. And I said, so what do you think's going to happen with these horses? Right? What do you think's going to happen? Well, people are, and I would get all these idyllic answers that, oh, well, we're going to put them down in this real humane way. Well, at the time, my wife's cousin is running one of the largest ranches in the state of Oregon. And we go out there to visit with them a couple of years after the enactment. And there are dumped horses literally all over Southeast Oregon at that time. Not wild horses, dumped horses. There were some wild horses that have been there for generations and generations. That's one thing. But you go out and you look at those animals and you watch them and they figure out how to thrive in the environment, et cetera. And over about 100 years, you know, survival of the fittest does kind of work in that setting and scenario. And then you watch all those horses out of California and Nevada and places in Utah, which surprisingly supported, that action. All those animals show up in Southeast Oregon somewhere and they died the most miserable, awful death. And so I don't even understand. I guess what I fail to understand is that these people really don't necessarily care about the animals. They just want to win this battle. It is because it's really profitable to them. But more importantly, they just want to control you. Mm-hmm.
That's it.
They just want to control what you do.
Yeah. See, now you guys are speaking my language. I am not. I'm a pure property rights zealot. And my neighbor's property is his property. And quite frankly, he can handle his property as he sees fit. Because what happens when you say, well, you should just go sit down with your neighbor. That's what happened in Pennsylvania. People went and sat down with their neighbor and they said, you know, your horse should have a barn. Your horse should have an enclosure. It's illegal to have a horse in Pennsylvania without providing a barn. I can make a pretty good case with my experience in horses that the horse that goes in a barn and comes back out into the weather has more of a stress to the immune system leading to an illness problem than a horse is just out in its own. And if you really want to go sit down with somebody who doesn't take care of their property, Jay just nailed it. Have you been to the range, the BLM range in Nevada? Have you seen the horses and what they do to each other? Have you seen the shortage of the feed that is supplied to these horses? And the very people who will go up and down the road looking for an animal abuser in their community are also supporting the federal government, the largest landowner, the largest horse owner, abusing their, allowing neglect. They're not abusing them. They're allowing neglect in a way that no animal owner in this country provides to their animals.
Right.
So I'm a property rights zealot, and it's important that the animal owner maintain the lowest level of stress possible for the animals that they own. But just because I don't conform to how somebody in a cubicle in Pennsylvania thinks I need to take care of my horse or raise my dogs in a kennel, I don't care.
But it's a fair enough thing to say that animals are animals. And they do, I mean, they do handle the environment differently than what we do. They just do.
Now you nailed it. 84% right? of all pet owners consider themselves to be mother or father of their pet. That's the problem.
Right. And sometimes say it like, sometimes, I was just going to say, sometimes it's said kind of in a lighthearted fashion, but increasingly so. It's something that people like passionately feel. And you really got to explore that a little bit. We lost a child back in 1987. It's one of those things, if you've ever experienced that, and I will tell you, I don't know how many people said, oh yeah, I kind of lost the child too once. I had a German Shepherd that passed away after we'd had it for 9 years.
I wish somebody'd tell me that.
And I've learned that it's better off not to talk because I don't want to get in a long conversation about, you know, my own pain and grief, because it is one of those things that 30 years later, it doesn't go away, right?
Right.
Those are things that stay with you for life. But people just don't understand how insulting that is, that you just said that you just agreed with Ingrid Newkirk when you said a brat is a pig is a dog is a boy, because mine was a boy. Mm-hmm. And you just said a dog is a boy. And again, that's part of this societal thing that we have. And I'm telling you, you can be a zealot on property rights. I'm kind of a zealot on the fact that the cornerstone of this failure that's taking place, that we're watching unfold in front of us in the United States, is the fact that we have placed government in a place in our mind and in our lives that is far and above where our founding fathers ever intended for it to be. Mm-hmm. And we're also putting celebrities and people of authority in the world around us in elevation over a place that they were ever supposed to be. And I am sorry too, if it offends the Catholics, that includes the Pope. And so when he strays off into some kind of secular turf, people should rein him in and bring him back. But it is what it is. And
by the way,
it's not going to get better.
For fair criticism, we are members of the Methodist Church, and I don't think the United Methodist Church at the national level is any different. So it's not just the Pope and the Catholics, they tend to be leading in this regime. But okay, Jay, first of all, I agree with Amanda Radke. Sorry for your loss. But it's about respecting human life.
Yeah.
That's really what it's about.
Right. I would just say that it's and I hate that it turns into that part of the discussion, because again, I worked in Washington, D.C. when I felt like it was a fairly comfortable place, that people realized that government really couldn't fix all the problems of your life. Right. There was a time when you worked in D.C. and you could kind of feel that and get the sense, and that sometimes people just needed to fix their own problems, solve their own problems. That is not the sense today. The sense is that you got a problem. Tell me what it is. I'll paint it. Right. I'm going to paint it red, or I'll paint it blue, and then we're going to sort you. And then you go to your defined corners and just see who's going to solve that problem for you. Well, it ain't going to happen, right? We're 70 years now, or 80, what, even longer than that, 70 years into 60 years into a war on poverty by trying to figure out how to subsidize the existence of poverty. And you know what? It just didn't work.
No. Lyndon Baines Johnson, he got rid of that before his term was up, Jay. Where have you been?
I read his press release. I did.
Well. Protect the Harvest is in the trenches, and the reason John and I were in Holmes County, Ohio this week was Protect the Harvest had organized the event, continuing to be the backbone and networking people, getting information to people to help them stand up for their own property rights. That's what it's about. Not doing anything for you, but working with you to get the solution. And that is what we're going to talk about in the last segment today. We're going to remain focused on solutions, exactly what Protect the Harvest does on a daily basis. ProtectTheHarvest.com. We're back to the last segment of Roll Route after this. Welcome back, Roll Route. Trent Lewis alongside John Boland, Jay Truitt, Amanda Radke, piping up pretty often here today, guys. And she's adding to her brood today. Mm-hmm. I don't want to speak out of turn or too quick, but complete adoption should be complete at the end of the day. So stay tuned. Amanda's going to join us on Friday, Red Shirt Friday. And she even sent me wardrobe. That's far too organized.
So you got
for
a
me.
Shirt?
Yeah, I did.
Good for her.
She thinks I'm going to wear another T-shirt, but we'll see. Okay, John. We're really good at identifying problems. Let's focus on solutions. The problem is that we respect everything other than human life too much. Human life is ultimately the most important in my mind. How do we get back to that? And Amanda also said earlier, we need to bring the dog lovers with the dog producers together on the same team. How do we do that?
First of all, I want to comment excuse me, on a comment that Walter made about Tucker Carlson giving the animal rights extremist a platform on mainstream media. I actually was shocked. Excuse me one moment while I clear my throat.
Jay, the guy just got a new mic. He wanted to have a mic like Trent, and he wanted to show that he knew how to operate.
Right,
So that's what he was doing. Good job, John.
Oh, look at that. That's one of those EIB style microphones.
We're getting fancy here in southern Indiana. I saw last night I was watching Newsmax, and they had an animal segment on Newsmax. And I told my wife, I said, come here and look at this. I said, I didn't think I would ever see this on Newsmax. And it was another one of these feel good garbage animal segments. I mean, I'm all about, talking about animals and stuff like that, but it was the same touchy feely garbage that Tucker does. And I don't know. I mean, it's just, I seriously get tired of talking about how we're going to fix this. And here's the biggest problem. I've made this comment before. The animal rights extremists, these elitists that are getting paid the big bucks, to sit in their offices and spend hours and hours and hours looking at ways to destroy us, know and count on the fact that we are blue collar, middle class, rural Americans that are going to be working all day long. And we've taken a stance, a position for far too long that, well, it's not affecting me personally. I don't know. I've never seen an animal rights extremist. They've never been on my farm. I don't know what. As long as they leave me alone, I'm okay. It's time to get out of that mindset and take time off. Take the time to shut down whatever operation you're doing for a day. And you know, farmers right now hearing me say that, even you two guys are probably like, oh my God, we can't do that. We can't. Yes, you can. You can find someone to come and do whatever has to be done on your farm for a day and go spend a day at the state house, at a county council meeting. Visiting with your local sheriff and asking pointed questions about, have your officers been trained by animal rights extremists? Does your law enforcement academy have a curriculum that includes any of these animal rights extremist ideologies, and demand change?
Right.
That's, we can do that.
Well, the assumption in there, and John's not assuming, he knows for a fact that the outreach from those two wealthy animal rights organizations that we identified are every day knocking on the door of local law enforcement to be a partner in seizing animals and taking them away from rightful owners.
Yeah. And millions of dollars in bribes. They'll write a check to any law enforcement organization or any so-called humane organization and give them a grant with strings attached. There you go. Then you end up with our police officers, our elected officials, and our police officers that we're paying for with our tax dollars become a weaponized arm of the animal rights extremist movement. That's happening in every state in this country.
But I think actually That is the exact statement that people have to look for, and you have to decide whether or not the statement that they've turned the activist. And listen, I've been an activist. I understand what that's like. I was one of those people that helped create activists for my own positions, et cetera, in the political process. And the first thing that you try to do is you look for ways to leverage your position into other people's positions. That's just what you do. That's the mechanics of teaching someone how to become an activist. And the truth is most farmers and ranchers really don't like it. Now I was trying to teach farmers and ranchers how to be activists. And that's like, kind of like pulling a rope with, Vaseline gloves, most of the time. But that people don't, I don't think anyone understands that's always going to be a core cornerstone of their training and their theory. And their methods that they're going to do that. And so, it means that you can, those people, you pay their salary, you pay for the local sheriff, you pay for the county council or city council or the authorities, to hold meetings, or they are your representatives of government. Don't allow them to be leveraged any more by that than you would. We shouldn't allow them to be leveraged by them any more than we would any other kooky, wild conspiracy idea. If Greta Thunberg were to show up out in a rural community, she wouldn't draw 12 people. She might draw 100 TV cameras from across the world, but she wouldn't draw 12 people. It'd be like a Joe Biden town hall meeting, right? Just nobody would actually be there. But at the end of the day, if it's the right 12 people that show up,
right,
you still won. And so it's not how big is the crowd, it's who was the crowd. And if it's all your local law enforcement that are going to spend the rest of the year that year driving around looking out in the pastures to see what they can see, and when they see something suspicious, not feeling bad at all about pulling in and looking behind somebody's barn without a warrant, it just becomes this whole different dynamic. And that's, I mean, again, it's in the book. It's literally in the training book, sadly, for how you create activism.
Well, and John Jay just opened the door for a couple minutes dissertation on open fields doctrine, because, you know, it's become painfully aware of how much of a pain in the address that is.
Another great example of where the animal rights extremists have looked for loopholes in the U.S. Constitution. And that the open fields exception to the search warrant rule is one that they definitely have capitalized on. And anybody that drives down the road that sees something that they deem as being animal cruelty or animal neglect, that can see it from a public vantage point, can report that. What's troubling is someone made in fact, Trent, I think you were in on this conversation there in Ohio. We were talking about search warrants. And I said, no, you don't have to have a search warrant or an arrest warrant. If it's a felony, you can make an arrest on the spot. You can search and seize in some states if you believe that you have probable cause to believe that a felony is being committed in your presence. And that could include driving down the road and looking at an animal. And since you are the expert, the animal expert, being that animal rights whether it be Pennsylvania SPCA or New Jersey or Indiana, whatever. If you've been trained and you've tried those techniques in a court of law and you're considered an expert in that field of work, then you can look at an animal in a field and say that animal fits the felony statutes. And most states now are making animal cruelty at every level a felony for this reason and more. If you believe that fits within the felony statutes, you can stop what you're doing and turn off your cell phone and then.
That was a good job, John. Worked that in there really well.
But right? I mean, that's the power that's being given. And there, one example of extreme overreach and power is happening in Pennsylvania right now. They're a carbon copy of what the New Jersey SPCA used to be, and it was shut down, fortunately. It was full of corruption, and that Pennsylvania is dealing with some of the same issues. Way too much power. Way too much power, and not the same accountability as most police officers. These humane officers are given minimal training. They're armed and given a badge and given the authority to search, seize, and make arrest without the same accountability and training as other police officers. They're given their own prosecutors. How can you assign a prosecutor specifically to animal cruelty and think that they're not going to be, that they're going to be objective in their thinking?
Well, it's just like a USDA inspector coming in and not finding something that was worthy of inspecting. That's his own, his or her own job security. John, we do have 2 minutes. I want you to address the Patricia question because I'm not clear myself. Drone usage and animal rights folks, or even partnering with law enforcement using drones to try to find some infraction. What's the legal standing of that?
A lot of states have passed laws that say that it's illegal for a drone to fly over your property and different elevations. There's specific statutes in every different state about drone usage. I do know that the animal rights organizations have drones. They own drones, the highest quality drones that can be purchased.
Well, they have $250 million in annual revenue. They can buy whatever equipment they want.
In fact, before I resigned from the ASPCA, I was compiling a list of good undercover equipment. That was part of my job when I was trying to draft their undercover policies and procedures. They wanted to know from my experience what was the best equipment to purchase. And I have to say now that the ASPCA's Field Investigation Response Team that I was a member of has changed its name to the National Field Response Team for whatever reason, rebranding. They have taken their bios off of the internet. They're the VP of investigations working out of New York is a retired FBI agent. And I know that they have MOUs and contracts with the FBI and with the U.S. Marshals. So if that doesn't concern folks, if that doesn't wake folks up, I don't know what will.
Jay, 10 seconds.
Nah, just the last statement he made says everything that it needs to be said, that Now we see this integrated, almost like an integrated conspiracy between the federal agencies that we all are held to their standard, or we're all held to their authority one way or another, and activists have gotten their hands in. I don't even know what to. I'm speechless. Yep.
That's way more than 10 seconds, and you were speechless. We've journeyed down the road connecting rural and urban America. All three of us remind you, all roads do lead to a rural route.